This episode is brought to you by Voodoo Ranger. It's beer. It's hoppy, trendsetting, innovative, served with a little sarcasm, just like Paper House Network. Paper House Network is hoppy? Yeah. It's like beer for your ears. Get yourself a Voodoo Ranger!
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised.
Hello and welcome to the Pinch Music Podcast, episode number 66, and we're calling this the Summer of Soul. We're here operating out of Pinch Recording in Long Island City as part of the Paper House Network. We haven't seen you in a couple weeks. We're excited to be back. We're fresh, we're hot, we're ready, we're gearing up to fucking destroy the goddamn universe. And, wait, did I swear?
We'll bleep that out.
Shit.
No, we won't.
I'm trying not to swear. I can't.
Just in life you're trying not to swear on the podcast?
No, on the podcast. Because wife says I swear too much on the podcast, and she likes to listen to it while she makes dinner, and the kids are there, and they're like, why does daddy swear so much? I'm going to try. From this moment on, for the rest of the episode, I am not going to swear.
Okay.
All right, so here to my left, we have the boy with the dragon tattoo.
I'm going to take the over on that bet, by the way.
And it is Nick Angelo.
Hey, everybody.
How are you?
I'm good. You and I are wearing the same shirt.
We are. And what shirt is that?
It's the Jazz is Everything, Everything is Jazz shirt, made famous here on the Pinch Music Podcast. And if you're interested in purchasing that shirt, just go to the show notes. The link to the merch store is there. And you, too, could buy yourself a Jazz is Everything, Everything is Jazz
Let
t-shirt.
Me get back to that. But to the right here, we have the Pickle Master, Jim Panels.
Great to be here, guys. Really excited to be back on the podcast.
Yeah, it's been tough. We've been very busy. Yeah.
Very busy. We got the summertime blues. We had to take a little bit of a break. We had to go places. Yeah. The
Is there
studio
a cure for that, by the way?
The summer ain't no cure for the summertime blues. But the studio has been crazy busy. As many of you know, as we have alluded to and kind of foreshadowed, we are in the process of making a Christmas album. And you got to do that in the summertime. So we have been absolutely busy, as well as Pinch Records is also putting together some really cool projects. So we've been...
There's a lot going on, and I'm doing all of it.
And it's a lot of work, a lot of time, a lot of effort in the studio. And then next thing you know, it's like, we don't have time to do this podcast. So you know what? We took a little sabbatical, regrouped a little bit. Now we're back. And just in time, because on Hulu, many of you could probably guess from the title of this episode, Questlove made a documentary called The Summer of Soul about the Harlem Cultural Festival that happened in the summer of 1969 up in Harlem. It was five shows throughout the entire summer that featured a lot of different types of African-American music. There was gospel, there was a gospel day, there was a blues day, there was R&B, and it was just the Summer of Soul, and the footage had never been released until
which is
now.
Mind-boggling.
It's mind-blowing that has never happened. Some people call it the Black Woodstock. I think that's kind of a tacky name for it, because it wasn't Woodstock at all. It was maybe better.
It was its own thing. But not to derail, and we'll get back to this, but how come Jim and I are not part of the merch store since we're promoting it everywhere?
What do you mean you're not part of the
merch store? I make a conscious effort not to say anything about it.
Because Nick's merch store is getting promoted on the podcast.
Yeah.
I think the only other person than me who bought a shirt is Pablo.
Yeah. And I thank you very much.
Where's my cut?
You'll get it. Well, you know what? When
you don't even buy coffee anymore.
You want the cut of Pablo's shirt, you're saying?
Yeah, we'll just get to scissors then. I don't know.
If you do want Pinch Recording water bottles, we have Pinch Recording water bottles now. Anyway, the documentary is really cool. I highly suggest watching it. Summer of Soul on Hulu. And it is something that I've been talking to a lot of people about, actually. And every single person's like, I had no idea that ever happened.
I had zero idea it happened before the documentary.
And
the cool thing about the documentary is, like, even the artists now were like, they didn't even know it happened. They were like watching it. The documentary shows some of the artists and fans that were at the concerts, and they're watching the footage for the first time since being there live, and they're like bringing tears to their eyes. And at one point, someone says like, "I'm just happy to know that that is that it that that did happen." That
it
memory
was some
I
guy
had,
that was like a little kid that went, and wasn't like sure that wasn't like.
Yeah, it was like a memory he had. He's like, I might have made that up. And he saw it. He's like, oh, my God, that did happen. Yeah. I do remember
How
that.
Does all that footage just never get released? Because, one, well, it's good, really good footage. I mean, there was hundreds of thousands of people at this thing. And the lineup was insane. Yeah.
White people.
Well,
I mean, that's what it was.
Is it, though? I don't know. Yeah.
Basically,
probably.
This is the deal. I mean, it wasn't like they were, like, suppressing the footage to make sure no one knew there was a Harlem Cultural Festival. But... the idea is Maxwell House sponsored it, and they basically said, we need to have this film so we can use it as like promotional material later. And then, you know, the company that came to film it basically after the fact could not find a buyer. No one wanted to do it. It was up basically because it was up against Woodstock. It was the same year as Woodstock. And there's obviously this super famous documentary about Woodstock. It was like, oh, well. This is something else. We're not going to make money off of this. So it just kind of got buried.
So it was because Woodstock was white people.
Yeah.
It was like the hippie movement.
Yeah. I think that's fair to say. I'm just saying it's not like some white dude was like, we're going to keep this under wraps.
But it was to a degree of, you know, that this was like an empowerment of the black movement in the 1969. And that was against the status quo. And that scared some people. Mm-hmm. And they didn't want that. I mean, there's a great part of this documentary that at the same time is when we allegedly landed on the moon, and they're asking people of Harlem, and they're like, the moon? We're sending people to the moon? I can't even get food for my family. We got homeless people everywhere, and we're talking about the moon?
And while it's funny enough, it's kind
it's
of
very
the same.
Relevant. Yeah.
It's the same thing with all the billionaires going into space right now.
Exactly, and it's just kind of one of those things. And then like Nina Simone's performance, I mean, that was like, ooh. Whoa! Like in 1969, if you're a white guy that has a business and you're not attaching your name to that, absolutely you're not going to do that. And it's bullshit. But I'm saying like that's why footage of this and it doesn't get out because it was an empowerment of black people and their culture. And it became like no, let's not. Yeah, well, there's Woodstock. We'll do that. Jimi Hendrix was at Woodstock. Well, let's talk about him. And it was like, no, this is. I mean, there's so much great music that happened during this festival, and for me personally, it's like after I watched the documentary, I looked at Claudia and go, I think I might be a fan of gospel music.
You think?
I would never consider that genre of something that I would listen to on a regular basis.
Really? But I would say if someone asked me, is Nick a gospel fan? I'd be like, yeah, I think he is.
But see,
just based on like what you listen to,
I wouldn't call it gospel. I would call it like, oh, so I would just generically call it soul, ignorantly be like, oh yeah, I like soul music. But you're like gospel, I'm like, nah, I'm not into that.
I mean, it all comes from gospel,
exactly. Yeah. And that's what it's like. You realize that, like, holy shit, because there's some performances that are just like tear jerk, like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. And we'll get into that.
Well, why don't we?
Yeah, let's jump into the tunes.
That is Sly and the Family Stone, Higher. That's the single version, and it's off the album Dance to the Music. Now, I put Sly on because, first of all, you have to put Sly on.
Yeah.
But two, what from a recording perspective, so many of these tunes are really fucking with the stereo image a lot. Mm-hmm. There's so much happening. You guys know I love that the stereo image, you know, the bass on the left and the singing on the right and all kinds of crazy shit. But Sly's performance in the documentary was kind of nutty. He comes out. Yeah. He's a fucking maniac. That dude's a maniac. And he's like a raging drug addict, crazy son of a bitch. So after the documentary, I started.
Your attempt at not swearing.
Oh,
you're,
shit, I forgot.
You're at six right now.
I forgot.
It's Sly, man.
You guys have to remind me.
You can't.
I want you to be you.
Oh, you got to remind me. I'm trying to be clean. I honestly don't think I can.
I don't think you can either.
But Yeah, so after I watched the documentary, now I'm only thinking about not swearing. After I watched the documentary, I started doing some research on Sly, and, you know, I'm somewhat familiar with the fact that he was a drug addict, and all that, but I didn't realize that, like, he only showed up to, like, 25% of his gigs, and he would, like, have sold-out clubs, sold-out stadiums, like, crazy, huge promotions, yeah. And he just wouldn't show up.
Wow.
I didn't know that.
He was
well,
known.
That's what they were saying.
But then why would
you
be doing that?
You don't know if he's coming out.
Yeah, but then why would you be doing that? Like, well, why, as a promoter, and you know, we own a ticketing company, and we do a lot of promoting. We own comedy clubs, the whole thing.
I know. I'm, like, having a panic attack thinking about this.
Yeah. Like, why would you book him knowing that that was his thing?
It was probably just like, well, he's that big. If this hits, we're
well,
rich.
They probably also just didn't give refunds.
Yeah.
Well, also, that also explains, because when you want, especially, like, in this documentary, but just in general, when you listen to Sly and the Family Stone, or you see their performance, you're like, why isn't this band bigger? Because Sly and the Family Stone does not not get a ton of love, and, like, when you're talking about the greatest of all time or favorite bands, no one ever says Sly and the Family Stone, and you see him, you're like, man, this band's awesome. And that's probably why, because people probably got burned by him so many times, they're like, fuck this dude.
Yeah. I do think Sly is one of those people, clearly they're not obscure, but people who are, like, into music are likely to rate him much higher than people who are just kind of casual.
I agree.
Because I think to people that are, like, into music, he's just, he's a legend.
Is it just me, but, like, everybody on that concert was, like, looked awesome. Like, sexy and, like, tight clothes. Very. And, like, they all looked young. Mm-hmm. I'm realizing now that everyone's just looks so freaking young. Yeah. Back then, like, they were all just young, like, mid-20s. Yeah. Like, just, they all just looked awesome.
I know.
And they were all so good at their instruments.
I know. I mean, we'll get this on the next song, but
well, you want to go into it?
Yeah. Well, one thing I did want to mention about Sly, though, that I found interesting, how they said he came up in the through the church. That's how he, like, got his whole thing. And then when you listen to his music and his, like, live performance of Higher, and really his whole persona, you can kind of feel that. It's like that plus the hippie movement plus his blackness combining to form this awesome thing.
Yeah, he was definitely a artist. You know, an eccentric artist, if you will.
LA
proved too much for the man.
Too much for the man. He couldn't make it.
So he's leaving the life he's come to know. Ooh.
He said he's going.
He said he's going back to find.
Going back to find.
Ooh, what's left of his world.
That's Midnight Train to Georgia by Gladys Knight and the Pips. And that this song actually came out after the festival. God, that's three times you've done it to me.
I'm sorry, but I keep doing it opposite of what I think is going to happen.
This song came out after the fact of the documentary and stuff, but that's the beauty of this documentary, is the lineup was so eclectic and just so much talent that it made me go and start looking up more soul music. And that's a genre we've never done. And it's kind of, and I kind of talked about this earlier about the gospel, and, like, soul's a kind of generic term because it's R&B, it's blues, it's gospel, it's everything mixed together. And basically what it is, it's African-American music, it's the black movement, and it's fucking incredible. Like, it's amazing. And I can sit with quote-unquote soul music for a week, and this is the perfect example of, like, Gladys Knight and the Pips. You may recognize her from the Motown era, but, you know, they had such a long career, and, like, this song in particular is after they left Motown, and it was just so much good music came from what was in that little concert of one summer of 69, and there's another one. Just spawned, like, the spider web that came out from the network that was that little concert. But the one thing about Gladys Knight and the Pips, I don't think she gets enough credit for, like, being the first front woman. I mean, she was the singer, and the background was men. Like, I don't think
that's pretty cool.
That doesn't get, like, I don't know if that's, like, the first ever, but I can't name one. And this, and, like, in the 60s, it was Gladys Knight and the Pips. And the Pips weren't the Marvelettes. They weren't the Supremes. It was four dudes. I mean, they were like her cousins and stuff, but it was four men backing up one woman, and that's awesome. And I think that needs to be yelled from the mountaintops how awesome that was. And Gladys Knight, you want to talk about how everyone looked back then when they were 20 years old. Did you see her when they did the interview with her later? She looked great.
I know, right?
Gladys Knight looks great.
They all look so good.
I know. That's what I was talking about before. I'm like, I can't believe that's Gladys Knight. She looked like a teenager. It was like crazy. I mean, she wasn't. She was like whatever, but she was in her 20s probably. But it was crazy because you think of Gladys Knight as like, I don't know, like a Vegas old school act.
Yeah.
But if she was like, oh, wow, she was young once.
You know what's interesting? Yeah. And this is kind of a theory I just thought of, maybe it's not even true, but there was a lot of, you figure Gladys Knight, Stevie Wonder, David Ruffin were all at this concert series. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I don't know about Stevie, but at the time, I believe they were all out of Motown. Oh. Or on their way out
of
Motown.
The way she was talking about it in her interview sounded like they were in Motown, and they also like lived within a block of each other.
Yeah, I think like this is the reason why I kind of put this song on is like she didn't record this song for Motown. She recorded it for another label. So like like 69, like the 70s kind of like Motown kind of fell apart, and I actually would like to do some more digging into that, but that's interesting that like Stevie Wonder, David Ruffin was there. He had just left the Temptations, and what a voice that guy has.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't even look like he's trying.
I know. That
David
crazy.
Ruffin?
Wow. How high he can get.
Yeah.
But I mean, I feel like I could get that high. Yeah. Ready?
Nope.
I couldn't even hear it. It was like exactly. Dog whistle pitch.
Thank you. Thank you, Jim, for picking up on that.
I was just nervous for my eardrums.
One thing that I will say that is something you said, Nick, that it's something that may not even be a thing. And it reminded me of this thing that Nick thinks you should do when you move into a place. Mm-hmm. You know, most people will burn sage to cleanse the spirits.
Yeah.
He came up with this thing in his brain. And you want to explain what you think this is?
I think we've talked about this before, but I, for some reason, thought I heard that when you're about to open up a new business, you get a bagpiper to come in and walk around the space playing bagpipes. And that's supposed to like bring good luck, good fortune. So I heard that years ago. Just kind of got
in your head. Heard it.
I don't know how I came up with this.
We can't find any.
Yeah. We need to start a web page that says this, and then like get it referenced on Wikipedia somewhere.
Because why don't we start it?
We should, but that's the thing. It's like so, like the film footage of this movie that happened to me years ago. I didn't think twice about it until we were about to open a second club here in New York, and I said, fully. Serious, all honest to God, hey, we should maybe get a bagpiper to come play around for good luck. And everyone looked at me, and I said it so serious that no one like looked at me like, what? They were like, why? I've never heard that. I go, oh, yeah, it's for good luck. Oh, I've never heard that. I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure. And then I went and looked for it. Nothing. I completely made that up.
It's kind of awesome.
Love it.
Yeah.
I would love to have that actually be a thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, let's listen to Jim's first choice.
So that's It's Time by Max Roach, and clearly just getting to the like really jazzy part there, but Max Roach is really a jazz drummer, played with every jazz musician you know, basically, and you know, he was at the Summer of Soul, and you know, sort of evolved into, I don't know if we'll call it poppier, but like more soulful sound. He played with a woman, I believe it was Abby Lincoln, who I was not familiar with before this movie. But yeah, I thought it was like a different sort of angle of black music to bring into the Summer of Soul, which was jazz and sort of recognizing the jazz influences. And, you know, we'll get into this more with some other picks, but the other cultural influences on music in Harlem at the time. But jazz was clearly a major one of those.
Well, I mean, I think it makes sense to bring jazz into this. I mean, because really you can bring jazz anywhere because
jazz is everything.
And everything is jazz. Mm-hmm.
It says so right on our shirts.
I've never really listened to Max Roach.
It's a name that I've always known, but yeah, he is and if you listen through some of this stuff, through the actual like jazzier part, he's an incredible drummer. And you can, you know, you can see, I mean, he played, like I said, with everyone. Dizzy Gillespie, Charlie Parker, Miles Davis, Duke Ellington.
Is it Gillespie?
It's Gillespie.
Gillespie. I don't, we've gone, this has happened many times on the podcast. I can't pronounce his name.
Gillespie?
Gillespie? Gillespie.
You said Gillespie.
I'm really embarrassed about that, but
it's okay. I've said some really fucking stupid things. Damn it. I swore again.
But he was the guy that's like, we need a drummer on this track.
By the way,
Max Roach. Keep it simple.
Can I bring this up? I think my favorite part of the film is right in the beginning when Stevie Wonder all of a sudden gets on the drums.
Yeah.
And he's like the best drummer you've heard in a very long time.
I didn't even know he could play drums.
The dude was an animal.
Well, this is the thing about Superstition. You know, he played every part except the horns.
Yeah,
that's,
but
every part is him.
Yeah, but live, like, yeah. And then he's like, boom. Blah, 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 like, he's going,
oh,
he's going crazy.
Yeah.
It's all about the placement of the cymbals, though, because he didn't know where it
was. Oh, God.
Just saying.
We're going to need another edit here.
Yeah, that was just incredible. Stevie Wonder, I mean, we should do an episode on just him.
That's actually a good idea,
because the amount of talent that oozed at him, and he was a young...
He's coming up later on the episode, FYI.
Yeah, we are going to get into him, so we'll get...
Wait, he's dead? When did he die?
What?
No, he's coming
up. You said he was. Is he dead?
No. When he was younger.
Oh, I see. Okay, sorry.
Yeah. By the way, if we're going to bring back our Voodoo Ranger drinking game, it should be every time Scott swears, take a drink of Voodoo Ranger.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
We need to promote, like, you know, mindful drinking habits here. Not getting smashed in one hour.
Maybe we'll get
I'm working on the swearing. You can't just fix a habit all of a sudden. It happens over time.
Yeah, it does. Mm-hmm.
So I'm doing the best I can. Let's move on.
Precious Lord, take my hand, lead me on, let me stand, I am tired.
Mahalia Jackson. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Mahalo.
Are you sure it's Mahalo? It's Mahalia. Take my hand, precious Lord. Now, this is actually a new discovery for me, and I feel sort of stupid not knowing about her before. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know if she's like super well known or not.
She is known within the community and
the
like
gospel community.
And it's a name. It's one. It's like what Jim just said about Roach is like. I know the name, but I would be lying to you if I was like, "Oh yeah, I love her when she did this." Like,
I'll be honest, I didn't know the name, and I never listened to her. And when she came up in the movie, I thought it was one of the most powerful performances I'd seen in a very long time. It seemed like the Lord was literally oozing out of her body. She was so
crushed me,
powerful,
dude, crushed me.
So I did some research on her, and actually, when I was in Salem, I went to a record store, which I spent 4 hours in, and spent almost $600. It was not good. Heather was like, how much money did you spend on this? Which, by the way, I got a Dolly Parton promo copy, original press, with her actual headshot.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
What was the name of the
glossy headshot?
What was the name of the record store?
Ugh, I don't remember.
Well, she give them a shout out after you just paid for their rent. She could at least give them a shout out.
Yeah. Anyway, what was I talking about? Oh, so I picked up two or three. I think I picked up three of her records there. Mm-hmm. They actually had, when I was there, they had a ton of soul. And I picked up a bunch of records from artists that I had seen on the documentary, specifically for that. Fifth Dimension was one I got. I think I got some Staple Singers. It was kind of cool. Nice. And so I've been listening to that music now. I mean, this episode really is kind of an inspiring episode. That documentary is very inspiring.
It was great. Questlove did a fantastic job.
Really good job. But with her, I didn't realize, because I had started doing some research about her, that her and Martin Luther King Jr. had relationship, not like intimate, but they were friends.
Yeah.
And she had a big part in the I Have a Dream speech. Apparently he had two different speeches that he was going to do. One was like about cashing a check that or something. Yeah. And the other one was like about of I Have a Dream. And she was like really encouraged him to do the I Have a Dream speech. And she sang at his funeral.
Yeah.
And this song just played was his favorite of hers.
Well,
they were talking a lot about him a lot.
I mean, that was what, because he had just recently got shot, right? And this was his favorite song. And at the concert, she was going to sing it, but she wasn't feeling very well. And didn't she pass, like, not
she
too
passed
long?
The mic. No, but she passed 3 years after this.
And then she basically gave the rub to Mavis Staple.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who came up and sang.
Yeah. Right. And it was like her shining moment. Yeah. It was like made her become the star that she became. Mm-hmm. And it was just like really cool and a powerful moment. And it was just like, it was every time. Like, just the way they sang, the way Mahalia Jackson sang with just, I want to say the word soul, but, like, just the emotion and, like, there was literal spirits coming out of her voice. And it was, like, now, today, you know, people will poke fun at the fact that, oh, the national anthem will be 5 minutes long because everyone's got to hold the notes long and blah, blah, blah. Well, I mean, she's the mother of that. I don't think you can duplicate what she did. And like I said, when I watched that performance, like, I cried. It gripped me.
Me too.
Shit.
It was very powerful. And like, did you guys ever seen The Green Mile?
Yeah.
Yes.
You know when the big guy has like shit coming out of his mouth? You know, he's like, and there's like all the weird like demons coming out. You know what I'm talking about or no?
I think I remember. I mean, it's like the big giant.
I know
dude.
Who he is. Yes.
He would take people's pain and then it would come out of his mouth like flies and shit. Okay. Like, just like demons coming. Like I almost picture her when she was singing, like all of like the negative energy and stuff just like releasing through her body, you know?
That's what they're saying.
Interesting analogy.
It's just very like visceral.
Yeah. It was the thing about Mavis Staples I did want to bring up though, because we're all saying, oh, we don't know her as much, but when they were interviewing the musicians talking about her, it was like, oh, she was like everything to them. Like that is where they got their stuff from.
Yeah. It's pretty powerful stuff.
Well, speaking of Mavis Staples, let's get into the next tune.
Some are pushing hard, some are holding back. You know it's a shame the way some people act. The president said we would overcome. We gotta keep pushing on until the work is done. It's been a change.
It's Been a Change by the Staple Singers. We were just talking about them. This is actually the song that they play during the part of the documentary where they're talking about the moon landing and how, you know, bogus it is when people are suffering right here in Harlem, and yet you're going to go worry about the moon. But the song, musically speaking, is once again the Staple Singers, Mavis Staple. Yeah, I know the names. I would be lying to you if I told you I had a favorite song of theirs. And then watching this documentary opened the lid of, like, holy smokes. The Staple Singers, I mean, pop staple, the pop, blue, like, blues-wise, is incredible. Like, I did some serious digging into just him and the blues part, and then he added, you know, his daughters, and they added the R&B and the gospel flavor to it as well. And then Mavis Staple then became, you know, she kind of got launched into her own stardom, you know, post 60s and whatnot, but I would like to think that performance with Mahalia Jackson kind of is the launching pad for her. But the Staple Singers, once again, I did a lot of, when I was trying to pick a song for the playlist, I definitely wanted the Staple Singers because I was so enthralled by them during the documentary, and it was like an hour of me just listening to all their music and forgetting that, I was just supposed to pick one song and keep moving. And I was into it. Like, now I'm considering myself as a Staple Singers fan, very novice. There's so much more I want to learn and know about them, but I'm into them.
How do you think do you think their real name is the Staples? like the back name, their last name, is it Staples?
Oh, I never really thought about that.
Or do you think they came up like, we're a staple in the soul industry?
Oh, I don't think that. I think...
Are their names really Staple? And how does someone's name become Staple?
I mean...
How does someone's name become Panels? That's another thing.
I mean, well, there's actually a story behind that.
That's right. I remember. Anyway, we won't get into your personal life. But how does someone's name become Staple? Jim, are you looking it up or are you
I'm trying to look it up.
Okay.
As far as I can tell, his name, the dad's name, last name was Staples. So
yeah,
that's all I got for you.
Yeah. And I wouldn't think that they were the type of, like, in order for you to be like, we are a staple of this genre, that's kind of like very... cocky of you to say that, which, you know, I don't hate it, but I wouldn't imagine anyone was doing that in the gospel world. Be like, we are a staple of gospel music. We are the Staples. Like, that seems like some
it's kinda cool, though.
Real corporate shit right there.
Really? All right, well, let's move on.
I know a beautiful truth, and it's helped me be free. I know I'm black, and I'm white, and I'm red. Yeah, the blood of mankind flows in me. And so in every face I see a part.
So that is Together by Ray Barretto, who played congas and sang. I thought that this was one of my favorite parts of the documentary, where they were really going through like the heavy influences of, you know, non-American cultures, Puerto Rican, Cuban, South American, African. And, you know, this is one of the artists that came up who I had never really heard of. But he played what's called boogaloo music, which later evolved into what we call salsa now. So he's one of the early, I don't know if we could say inventors, but proponents of that kind of music. Overall, the reason I wanted to get him on here is to talk about that influence of other cultures that was coming into the Harlem Cultural Festival and Harlem in general, where it's not, you know, East Harlem, it's a very like Latin neighborhood, and you're, there was, you know, when people interviewed say, you know, at that time, you just walk down the streets of East Harlem, you're just hearing music on every stoop, on every corner, and it's all this different types of music from all over the world. And that, you know, started to have a heavy influence on black music in the late 60s, and they sort of started to merge into one thing, and even touches on that theme in a way at the beginning of that, saying he's like, well, I'm black, I'm Latin, I'm white, I'm red, whatever. It's like all kind of flowing together here.
How awesome is that? And it's we've talked about this before, about how like New York in the 80s, and we think about, oh man, CBGBs would have been so cool, but meanwhile we're like, no, it would have been a shithole. Like it smelled like piss, it looked like shit. Like, you know, we romanticize it now from this time. How awesome is it to think like, oh, walking around Harlem and just hearing worldly music and everyone just dancing and having a good time? You think how awesome that would be right now, but then it's like a car drives by and they have music blaring. I'm like, shut up! Turn that down! It's like, would I have been the same way in 1969 walking around Harlem? Being like,
those kids playing music on the stoop.
Stop what you're drumming. Oh my, it's drumming all night long. But now I'm like, oh, I would do anything to go back and be like, if I walked around Astoria, Queens, and someone's playing the congas, this outside jamming, I'd be like, I literally would be like, this is awesome. This is amazing. But yet, if someone drives by with a loud car, I'm like, oh my God, this is, turn it down. I just think about that. Well,
they're different things.
Is it the type of music that's in the car that's driving you crazy? Like, what if they went by and it was the Staple Singers? Would you be like, awesome? Or would you be like, turn it down?
I think I would be awesome just for the fact that...
So it's the type of music.
It's so unique that no one would do that.
Yeah. Because a lot of the music that goes by that's super loud can be obnoxious.
It's awful.
Yeah. There's also a lot of like heavy bass involved and, you know, electronic drums. And you can't hear yourself think.
But yeah, so like, I'm just saying... The loudness of a song is annoying.
It's also coming out of a stereo. A live musician on the corner with an acoustic instrument is a whole different vibe and feel.
I agree. I'm just posing the question. Like, yeah. I just think
I think it's the type of music, because if somebody went by blasting canned vitamin C, I'd be like, this is fucking amazing. And then the next car was doing Drake, I'd be like, fuck this.
Huh.
But see, so, everybody does Drake, no one does canned. If like four cars drove by your house while you were eating dinner with your family and it was all canned, by the third time, you're like, okay, all right, I get it.
No, I don't think so. No? I'd be like, this all is right. the most amazing three
Scott
cars.
Would be like, I need to get a car with a loud stereo now.
Yeah. If it was just like endless cars of playing can while I was eating dinner, I'd be like, this is the coolest psychedelic experience I've ever had in my life.
You would be like, Andy Hag's here and he's driving around my block.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay, let's move on. That is the Fifth Dimension, Age of Aquarius, off the album Age of Aquarius. So they did a basically a cover, right, of the Hair.
Oh, I thought it was the other way around.
No.
I don't know.
Is it?
You're probably right. I don't know.
Well, we should definitely look into that, because I thought it was, I'm pretty sure it was
I thought
a cover.
They did the music, and then like it was like, whatever.
That's interesting.
We're looking this up right now.
I thought they asked to do it.
I don't know. Either way, the performance of them doing it was super cool. The coolest clothes on. It was like so vibey, man. I swear they were like wearing like orange suede.
Yeah.
You know? But I didn't even know about the Fifth Dimension.
Mm.
I don't know if you guys did.
Oh, well, I know this.
Yeah, everybody knows this. Everybody knows this. I never knew this was a thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, this is...
I always thought this was the original, but no, I'm wrong. Scott's right. It was written for the musical Hair by, some couple...
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Musical this was, composers. This, yeah, is, this a cover. Is a cover.
Yeah, this is a cover.
Yeah.
But it got huge.
Yeah.
Well, it kind of makes us maybe, we've talked about this before, but it's cool the fact that how big Broadway is and that the musical Hair was like the thing. People were.
Yeah, because they got naked on the stage.
Yeah, and you couldn't get into it. And like there's certain play, like it's like Hamilton now or was a couple years ago, like you couldn't get tickets, or the Book of Mormon a couple years ago, like you couldn't get tickets to these shows, and it's just like living in New York, I feel like sometimes I underestimate Broadway, and I kind of like, yeah, well, it's
especially now during the pandemic that it's closed.
Why, why do you think no tourists are here?
Yeah
exactly,
that's like, why no tourists are here.
I mean it's really like such a huge deal. And this is a perfect example. Like even in 69, like, there was a play that you couldn't get into, and this band was like, can we cover this song?
Mm-hmm.
They're like, yeah, go ahead. And it was just like a big thing, because Broadway is that influential and important to art and to the culture. And I mean, for New York City, the business. And I think that we should do a Broadway show. We should do a Broadway episode.
Broadway episode or a Broadway show?
We should do both.
Both.
Didn't you have an idea for a Broadway show at one point?
I'm going to
it's a musical version of some cult classic movie. I'm shutting it down.
It's a one-man show that is titled Sorry You're Just Not Sad Enough.
And what is that about?
It's about how I feel like, you know, I suffer with depression, but like when you look at other people's stories, you're like, well, it ain't that bad.
You're no George Costanza.
Yeah, it's like, exactly. It's exactly that. Like my, like, you know, it's pretty bad. But then
so, are you doing the show?
I'm still working on it.
You just sit there in a chair.
Yeah, and have everyone look at me and be like, "Sorry, guys, it's just not that sad enough." That's what it is.
It sounds like a good show.
Oh,
it's in the works. It's in the works as well as my book. But you know what? Enough about me.
And those things are never going to happen. Well, I imagine.
Keep
your book. Down. Wait, what's your book?
I'm writing a book. I'm currently writing
about
a book.
About what?
It's about...
How many pages you have written?
It's the outline. You have to get the outline first, Scott. You can't just dive into a book.
How many pages of the outline do you have written?
Yeah.
I got a handful.
Do you really?
Yeah.
What is the book about?
The book is called I've Learned Everything I Need to Know in Life by Being a Pro Wrestling Fan. It's a fun, light look at, you know, positivity of life, but how it runs parallel with wrestling, pro wrestling.
Huh. That's fascinating.
I really wish it didn't have pro wrestling involved.
I love it though.
Well, I was so excited for your book.
That's
and then,
that's the point though. Man. You get to kind of. You don't need to be a pro wrestling fan to enjoy it, but it helps.
Very nice. I do have to say before we move on to not to jump back to the music or anything, but that Let the Sun Shine In, this version of it, is like one of my favorite bass lines ever. I love it.
Really?
Yeah.
This version's cool too.
That's what this version.
Oh, this specific version. Yeah. It's like an old beat up amp.
Yeah.
I love that vibe so much. Yeah. I'm getting a tape machine. Did I tell you guys this?
Yeah. This might be the couch.
Yeah. So
where are we going to record the podcast?
Yeah. That's a good point. You're going to be sitting next to the tape machine. Well, we're going to be the first podcast to record to
now we
gotta 24 get a track analog tape.
Now we got
to
get a studio. just a podcast studio.
Yeah, we should get a studio.
Yeah, we should get a studio.
Big shout out to API, by the way. Anyways.
But yeah, we're going to be getting rid of this couch and it's going to be a tape machine. I don't know where my clients are going to sit, but I don't care because their music's going to sound fucking great and they're going to be happy about it. Shit, I swore again.
You did again. That is Besame Mucho by Hugh Masekela and Herb Alpert. So Hugh Masekela was featured in the documentary Summer of Soul, and I had never heard of him, and I thought it was really cool. He is a South African trumpeteer. He is kind of, I've never really heard of him, so for me to, maybe I'm wrong, but I know he's kind of one of the forefathers of kind of fusion, if you will, kind of adds a whole nother flavor to jazz music.
Still trying to figure out what fusion is.
Still trying to figure out what fusion is, but from my understanding is he's, you know.
What did you put on the fusion playlist? Red Hot Chili Peppers?
Yeah, that's two things fused together. But anyway, he's a very talented musician, plays more than just trumpet, and I really got into him, and my stupidity. When I first heard him, I thought they said Masekela.
I was going to make the joke.
As the Wu-Tang Clan member.
Okay. Yep.
Like, who? Wait, what? And then it was like, no, Masekela. And I was like, oh. So I was doing some research on him because I definitely dug his sound. And I saw that he had a live compilation album with Herb Alpert, who, if you have ever gone to a record store, you have seen a Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass, and he's everywhere. If you ever see like a box of records, like on a sidewalk, or someone's trying to get rid of them, or you're at a flea market and there's like a dollar for records, I guarantee you, you're going to come across Herb Alpert, which makes it seem like he sucks, but he doesn't. He's awesome. So when I saw that Masekela and Herb Alpert did an album together, I naturally started listening to it, and I was blown away on how good it is. So I put it on the playlist, and I highly recommend that you check out this album, and that just Hugh Masekela in general, and Herb Alpert, and the Tijuana Brass. Just, it's all good, baby. It was all good. And that's the beauty of that documentary and soul music in general. It is all-encompassing. It's not just one style of music, and the documentary showed that, and it really opened the door to a lot of artists that, yes, maybe I've heard of before but never really got into. And I'm so grateful that we actually decided to watch that documentary and do an episode about it, because now I'm like, between the Staple Singers and Hugh Masekela, I'm like, I have so much more to listen to that I'm actually kind of excited when this is over so I can go upstairs and listen to it.
By the way, you can eat those hot peppers?
Those Red Hot Chili Peppers?
And Jim, what's going on with you, buddy? Your eyes are watering.
I'm getting some bad allergies over here. I just held back a major sneeze.
From the peppers?
Oh, you held back a sneeze and now you're crying. It was really a fart, though.
Scott brought in peppers, by the way, for those
hot peppers.
Who are still listening.
And Silk City hot sauce.
Yes, you're trucking on the ray. We are sponsored by a hot sauce company, Silk City Hot Sauce. Go to silkcityhotsauce.com. If you use the code PINCH, P-I-N-C-H, you'll get 15% off your entire order. The hot sauce is not only delicious, but some of them are really freaking hot. So if you're into that kind of thing, SilkCityHotSauce.com. If you just like good flavor, SilkCityHotSauce.com. And since they're from Vermont, they got syrup. So SilkCityHotSauce.com. Use the code PINCH.
So that's Shooby-Dooby-Doo-Da-Day by Stevie Wonder.
Say that again.
Shooby-Dooby-Doo-Ba-Day.
Say it again, Jim.
I don't know if I can. Shooby-Dooby-Doo-Da-Day.
Shooby-Dooby-Doo-Ba-Day.
But this was probably musically my favorite song that I heard in the documentary. I would strongly recommend checking it out to see this performance. Obviously, there's more words than you could say about Stevie Wonder that we have time for, but he gets so funky on the clavinet in his performance.
Yeah, the clav, baby, the clav.
It is like, and we were talking about how you guys are like, oh my God, he plays drums. Like, and he's not just doesn't play drums. He like crushes it on the drums. When I was watching, like, it's just like, he is playing percussion and he's using some tonality. It's like so unreal to watch him play it.
The clav is a really cool instrument that basically pulls guitar strings and then the guitar strings are plucked.
Yeah.
And then it is connected with basically guitar pickups in a way.
Yeah.
And a wah pedal. Mm-hmm. And it's all encompassed in this weird wooden situation, and it's a very unique instrument that you don't find a lot, and we actually have one here at Pinch. Yeah. It is our good friend Adam Ahuja's, and he has left it here for us to use.
Yeah, but yeah, it's just like that quintessential late 60s, early 70s funk sound that you hear on all those tracks. But
yep.
They're very, yeah, kind of hard to find instrument.
Yeah, they are.
Days.
Well, let me ask you this. This was kind of like what did Stevie Wonder, did he have any huge release before this concert? Like,
I don't know enough about
the songs in The Key of Life and like Talking Book. Like those.
This is off for Once in My Life, which came out in 68.
Yeah, and that was like his biggest hit at the time.
Yeah.
Which to me is one of my all-time favorite songs. But then he became Stevie frickin' Wonder after this. And it's almost like you could kind of see the evolution of Stevie Wonder. I may be wrong. He may have had
you got to remember. I mean, he goes back. He's a child star, little Stevie Wonder. So he was already huge.
Yeah.
But Stevie Wonder, as we may know him.
Was he blind as a child?
Yeah.
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 Well, that was what I was talking about earlier. Like, he was a very, very young age when he was showing up at Motown and doing what he did. And, you know, he was the Motown sound and followed that equation. And then he kind of grew to his own thing. And then I feel, and once again, I could be wrong, I feel like this performance he did in 69 kind of was the beginning of what we know as some of the best music ever that came from Stevie Wonder post 69. Yeah. But I could be wrong. I'm not exactly sure his discography, but he wasn't the guy yet. He was really good, very talented, and wildly popular, but like, he wasn't making the greatest music of all time yet.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, so this was For Once in My Life. This album is when he first used the clavinet, as we heard on this. So he's getting much funkier. But yeah, before this, like you're saying, he was on Motown, so he had the Motown style. He was in his, a jacket and tie, and that was it. And then after this, he got like a little wilder and funkier.
It's the 70s, man.
Yeah.
Then he showed up on the Cosby Show in the 80s, and it was all downhill from there.
Was it?
Oh God.
Well,
remember
listen,
that? You don't remember that when Claire Huxtable sang. Mm-hmm.
We don't talk about Cosby.
Oh.
It's been a wonderful episode. We do highly recommend checking out that documentary. It's on Hulu.
It's on Hulu. Check out The Summer of Soul. Questlove did a fantastic job putting that together. Make sure you're checking that out. And also make sure you are following us on Instagram, Pinch Recording. Check out Pinch Records Official. And make sure you follow our playlist on Spotify. It's the Pinch Music Podcast Playlist, where you can see all the gigantic playlist we put together for each episode to give to you every week. And also check out the awesome shows here on Paper House Network. And leave us a note. Leave us a message. Share, like, subscribe.
And if you're in the New York area, we are doing a Paper House Live show twice a month at the New York Comedy Club.
Yeah, make sure you're getting tickets for the New York Comedy Club. We'll leave you a link there in the show notes as well. The New York Comedy Club will be doing Pinch Live twice a month. So make sure you check out for that. And let's play a little game.
Okay.
If you're out there at a record store or you're in a box of records at a yard sale, take a picture of the Herb Alpert and send it to us, because I guarantee you're going to find some Herb Alpert, and maybe with the Tijuana Brass, maybe without the Tijuana Brass. But I want to see all the pictures of the pinchers out there shuffling through the record crates and finding their Herb Alpert albums. Send them our way. Send them to us at on Instagram, or just email me, guys. Nick@pinchmusic.com.
Also, Jim is going to be doing a diving competition at the Astoria Pool.
All right, guys. You're really psyching me out here. I didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah, so he's going to be in his Jim Speedo that just says Jim on the ass. Yeah. So if you want to see Jim's beautiful butt...
There's no ass on a Speedo.
Look, what are you talking about?
Speedos don't really have an ass. Really?
What are you talking about?
Yeah, they are. What do you
mean? Not a thong.
You wear a thong, though.
Oh, that's right. He's going to have it. It's going to be written on his ass.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, we'll have more ticket link info to Jim's diving competition later in the week. See you guys next week. Bye.
Paper House.